This meeting is now being recorded.
Marshals have been coming from time to time to guide the child humanity back to their homes. When they come, they ask us whatever all around them, they must look into the deep down into the things and find out what is real and what is unreal. What is lasting and what is temporary. Vedas tell us, O Lord, lead us from the unreal to the real, from darkness to light. Now as you see, the world is changing all around us. And men who are with us, some are coming, born, some are being put underground and are cremated. Child is small, grows up in years, and ultimately he to leave the world. So this is what all masters have been telling us, to discriminate. There is a proverbial bird. It is said that when milk and water is mixed up, that bird has a special quality. He puts his beak into the water and water is separate from the milk. So, we as we are also discriminatory birds. Master have compared us to the discriminatory bird. When you come to the world, you look into the things and see what is real and what is unreal, what is lasting and what is temporary. Let us, as we have seen all around us, we find like that, everything is changing. And now directly concerned we are with our own man body. It is also changing. We are someday small, then high, then young, then old. Some pass away with quite young. Some during the poverty time. Some at the age of the old. So this is not lasting. So masters draw attention to this. You are a discriminatory bird. Discriminate between what is permanent and what is temporary. Now let us look to our own selves. We are conscious entities, drops of the ocean of all consciousness, which is permanent, eternal. So as God is eternal, permanent, so we are also eternal. God is spirit, we are spirit in man. We cannot do less than that. But the body that we have been given, this is changing. Body is made up of matter. Matter is further made up of elements. And they are changing. So matter is changing every moment of life. And all the world around us is also changing. At the same speed as our body is changing. So the body that we are carrying, all masters beside you, need not quote everybody. Guru Arjan tells us, well, look, what is the real thing and what is the lasting thing and what is changing. So when you find something lasting that requires to be adhered to, and what is changing, naturally you simply make the best use of the things that are given to you. So man body is given to you as a golden opportunity, though very short time. It is not lasting, it is not our home, but in this temporary home that we have been given by God, we can do something very important. And that is that in man body only, we can know God. We can solve the mystery of life, what it is that carries this body. This body works on account of us. When we leave the body, who cares for the body? After some time, it is put underground or cremated, according to the custom prevailing. But at the same time, I tell you, it is a golden opportunity. Masters did come. They solved the mystery of life. And those who met them, they also were able to solve the mystery of life. What they found? That man body is the highest in all creation. Highest in the rung of creation. The work that you can do in man body cannot be done in any other body. In the animals, birds, reptiles. And what is that? We, as I told you, they tell us you are discriminatory birds. Discriminate which is right and wrong. What is lasting, what is temporary. What is light and what is dark. Lead me from the darkness to light, as the Vedas say. Lead me from the unreal to the real. Also Christ says, let the light in you be not darkness. They are drawing our attention to our own self, who we are, what we are. Are we the man body? You say no. We have the man body. This is the first companion that we have when we enter into the world. But when we leave, this first companion also does not go along with us. What to speak of all other things which have come in our contact through the man body? So that is why Christ said, lay thy treasures in heaven. You see, where no moth will eat. So this life is temporary. This physical body unit, that is also temporary. But golden opportunity, of course. The world around us is also temporary, changing all the time. Our souls are under the control of mind. Mind is under the control of the outgoing faculties. And outgoing faculties are driven like anything by the inhabitants outside. It is we who give strength to the mind, to the outgoing faculties. But the whole thing is topsy-turvy. Enjoyments drag the outgoing faculties like anything. Good scenery, good beauty, music, outside, other things. And outgoing enjoyments drag our outgoing faculties and outgoing faculties drawing the mind, dragging the mind, and mind is dragging the soul. Just take the case of a factory run by powerhouse. There are some certain staffs connected with the different departments of the factory. Whichever department you would like to close down, you take out the staff connected with that. If you want to close down the whole factory, you will take off the main staff. So the factory of the man body is also run by us. We have also got different departments on the site. Eyes, of the ear, hearing outside, of the smell, of the taste, the outer attack. So many departments are working on account of us, because we give strength to them. They themselves, they are not possible, it is not possible for them to enjoy outside things. So Master tell us, man body is a golden opportunity that you got. Make the best use of it. In what connection? The outer connections, parents, brothers, sisters, wives, husbands, they come up as a reaction of the past. We are bound, like all other bodies which they have. But we are free with the certain limits. The railway line is laid down. And the train will run over that. Further, you are free to lay down line anywhere you like. So in mad body, we are bound to certain extent and free with a certain limit. This freedom is not had in any other body or creation. Animals cannot do it, birds cannot do it. So here, Master comes and look here, discriminate between right and wrong, lasting and changing. What is lasting, adhere to that, and what is changing, make the best use of that. The whole angle of it is the change. So what does it tell us? Man body is the highest in all creation, that's right. We are drops of the ocean of all consciousness, and God is all wisdom, all jaya, and all lost in eternal. Now that reflection we have got, we are of the same essence as that of God. That is the reflection within us. You see so many men carrying on your shoulders to the cremation places, to the burial places, but you never think of that you have to die. Although you see with your eyes, with your hands, you're carrying somebody, like the very body that you are carrying. Because the reflection of that eternity within you. God is all wisdom. Take the case of any small child. When he talks like anybody who talks, he said, I know the best of all. Nobody else knows so much as I know. It's a reflection of that. So God is all jaya. All happiness. That reflection is within us. We all want jaya, okay? Happiness. Why we have money? To be happy. Why we have got families? To be happy, ultimate goal. Why we want to have houses? To be happy. Why we want carriages and cars and other things, just to have facilities and diet. So in outer things, with all that, we are not happy. This is a point to be shifted. You say we do enjoy, we do feel happiness at times. True, it is. And at other times, we are not happy. Now just go into it, why you feel happiness sometimes and why you feel unhappiness. Take the example of a dog, to understand the thing. He is eating a bone. You know, bone has no taste, but he eats it up, his own blood drinks and he drinks that. So in eating bone there is no happiness. His own blood is eating. Similar jaya is within us. When that attention is riveted at a certain place, we feel happy. Maybe anything. You are just going by your friend, who is our, you just happy. Then jaya, you feel happiness. Similar when you other things give you happiness only so long as you are attached. And those things to you are attacked. If they are temporary, transitory, then what to do? Naturally, when you withdraw from them, you feel unhappiness. So master's advice, contribute yourself with someone who is ever permanent. And who is that? God alone. So it is God who made all this creation. It is well planned, you see, well controlled all around. There are planets who have gone around their orbits, have been seen only once in 5,000 years. Just see, in time baffles, how great the creation is. And they never strike against one another. Everybody going on their own orbit. How well controlled it is. Sun rises at the appointed hour. No minute less and no more. How well planned it is. As our trainer ring in time, sometimes they are late, but this is never late. So it is well planned, well controlled. So they say, hey, just you want to be permanently happy, contact with God, with everlasting, every eternal. And where is that God? How can we find Him? How can we contact with Him? That's a pointless. So God made all this creation and is reverberating in all creation. He's not out of He's imminent in every form. So, that is concerned with our own man body. In this man body also He is with us. Man is a wonderful house we live in. It has got so many apertures of eyes, two nostrils, two ears, mouth and two underneath. With all that, the doors are open. We cannot run away out of it. So body works so long as we are in the body. And our bodies are controlled. We are controlled in the body from higher power, which does not let us go out at our will. And that is the God into special power. So there are two aspects of God. One is God absolute, which nobody has seen. God, nobody has seen God at any time. When that God power absolute came into being, He wanted to have one and wished to be many. That power came into expression. That power is called Nama. That power is called world. He is worldless. When it came into being, it was called world. In the beginning was the world. World was with God and world was God. And all creation came up after that. So that God into expression power is the maker of all this creation. And if you come in contact with the God into expression power, that will lead us to the absolute God, from where it emanated. So God, as I told you, directly inspires man body. We are in the man body. And that controlling power, which is God into expression power, is also in this man power, body, controlling us. So Master says, we have seen God. What God? God into special power. When He said, I am one and wish to be many, there was vibration. Vibration results in two things, light and sound. God is light and God is nada. God is music of the spheres. God is ringing, what you say? Ringing music. Ringing light, you can say. So that power is controlling you within the body. You come in contact with that. That will never die, and you will never die. And that will be able to lead you to the place where from that emanated. So take the example of a ray of the sun. Sun has got rays. If you know how to write on the ray, ray will lead you to the sun from which it emanated. So nama, word, or kalma, yogi, shabda, is the direct way back to God, the king of yoga. And that resides in your heart. God resides in every heart. And you also reside in the same man body. Both are in the same body, but we are seeking amiss. We seek him in outside things, you see. So Master tells us, oh man, be a discriminatory world, discriminate between the right and the wrong, permanent and the changing. That permanent is within you also. But you are identified with the mind so and so and body so and so and outward going it. Faculty so much so that you have forgotten yourself. So masters tell us, rishis of the old and all who came after that, in their own times, oh man, know thyself. Greek philosophers have to say the same thing, in their own language, gnosticism. Old Latins have to say the same thing, gnosticism, in their own language. And all other cities, Guru Nanak says, unless you analyze yourself to know yourself, you cannot be out of the delusion. You know how grand delusion it is. Our souls are under control of mind, mind under control of outgoing faculties and outgoing faculties drawn like anything by the outgoing diamonds. We identify so much so with the body which is changing every moment of life that we have forgotten also. Although this machinery works on account of us. So must tell us, please know thyself. How to know ourselves comes next. Generally we know at the level of feeling, our drawing influences. They are both sabdhutyara, seeing it above all. So I have put off, can put off my coat, this is my coat, this is my watch, I can put it off. I put it off my boots. But we say it is my mind, my intellect, my body, my outward life. Can you put off? So masters tell us how to rise above these outward faculties and body. They not only tell us how, but give us a demonstration of that. So the outward expression of the soul is attention, called attention. So attention will be drawn when it is drawn from all outside and also from the body below. The soul seated at the back of the eyes. When we come to the earth, we succeed in coming out the earth, we find the sati being run by us. We are the master of this sati of the body. Guru Ramdas tells us, praise that one, praise of God, to give me such a guru, such a master, who will enable me to control all my outgoing faculties. Who is a touchstone, you see, there's a certain power of a stone when it touches all metals, they turn the metals into gold. He prays, let us meet with such a master, who is like that, by touching which man becomes gold. Then he said, my prayer was succeeded, and God gave me a guru who only not made me gold, but made me that very stone itself. Now those who come in contact with me, they are all certain to go. Then he said, what did you get? He said, I am the master of my man body now, of the factory of the man body. I have given 10 servants to work under me. And who are they? Eye and sight, ear and audition, tongue and taste, you see, nose and smell, and body and head. So he says, now 10 servants at my beck and call. Now they don't drag me. I have come above them. I have risen above them. Now they are at my beck and call. This is the first success. A man who sits at the feet of the master and follows what he says actually. He gave the demonstration of that the very first day. Maybe little or more. How to rise above body. So all these 5 Descartes, you know, lust, anger, taste, and all that they all of the sale attack you. Man concerned attacks us from these outgoing faculties. Lust attacks us through the eyes. Eyes attack, I mean, anger attacks us through the ears. When you're angry at somebody, the word, the more the other, the more boost you get, the more angry. So they are centers, you see. Attachment grows more when you embrace somebody. So these centers you rise above. This is the first demonstration given by a saint to rise above body consciousness. We are at the back. All these outgoing faculties of human belong. I see yourself. And there they give you something. More tasteful, more blissful, more enchanting. The bliss of which when the mind gets, he forgets all outer enjoyment. So man-body, I told you, God also resides in this very man-body, and we also reside in this. Master says, yes, we have seen God. Guru Nanak went to Persia. There, Qazi Rukundin, a saint out there, he asked Guru Nanak, have you seen the house of God? He said, yes, I've seen. Then he demonstrated this man. There are vessels, 1, 2, 3, 6, and 12 vessels. There are 52 minarets, 32 teeth, and 20 nails. There are 2 windows in the house. These are the windows. Above that, God calls us, come back, my children, to your home. So he described this very man's body. The bad body. Can we see also? Yes. He says, you can see this very man's body, which you now consider only a, what is, store of filth, orange, blood, intestines. It is the man body, the true temple of God in which you reside and we reside too. God resides where? God doesn't, all scriptures tell us, God doesn't reside in temples made with stones. I gave a talk that in London once, one bishop rose up. You have thrown atom of honor out of Christianity. What he means? Out of churches, temples, mosques are made by man. Out of the murder of man body. And this man body is made by whom? By the hands of God in the womb of the mother. So God desires in the house which he has made. And that is this which we live. So with the grace of a master whose inner eye is open to see that it is the temple of God, we ask him, how do you say it is temple of God? We do not say. This is a but natural question arises. He says, God is within you. This man body is the true temple of God. Only reason is why you can't see is that mind stands between you and God in the body. You know, as I told you just a minute before, that our souls are under the control of mind. Mind is under the control of outgoing faculties. Outgoing faculties are drawn like gravity by the outer environment. So we are identified with this man body and outer thing. So much that we have forgotten outer. So if first thing will be to how to control the mind. So Master sometimes tells us in a joking way, there's a man praying to God. Oh God, I'm very thankful to you, grateful to you, that my heart has been taken away last night by the thieves. He was thanking God. And we have been in this place, what we would have done. People ask him, what is there to thank God that your heart has been taken away? I am thanking God only for the reason that I was not riding on the horse, otherwise I would also be taken away. I think he was very wise. He saved the rider and let the horse go, and what we have done, can you consider for a while? By discrimination, that the horse you are riding, you are controlling it, and we do not know about the rider. We are ourselves are. So Master tells us now there should be something to do, how to control the mind. First thing is, mind must be given something more blissful, more enchanting, more beautiful. The outer enjoyments and by the mind can be divided into two parts. One, good scenery, good beauty, and then good music. All enjoyments get boiled up to that. So God has given us the same privilege within us, which is more enchanting, more music, and more bliss. And that is God's expression power when it came into being outside. There was vibration, and there are two aspects of light and sound. Thy word is a lamp unto my feet.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Satsang from Master Kirpal Singh. Before we begin, a reminder, next week, turn your clocks back 1 hour before the Satsang. So the recording you just heard was from 1972, September 16th, at Liverpool, England. So this morning our reader is Jack Weinstein. Are you there, Jack?
Yes, I am.
Okay, carry on.
I will continue where I left off last time I read. It's from the Teachings of Kirpal Singh, Volume 2, pages 134 to 140, Befriend the Mind. The mind is undoubtedly our enemy, and is too superior in strength to be annihilated. It is an innovation introduced by Swamiji, who tells us to make friends with the mind, which is an agent of the negative power, and in its present state, an enemy of the soul. Instead of fighting with it right and left and to no purpose, we may make the best use of the mind in a friendly way. You know that mind has a tendency to tread on much-beaten tracks. That is, it creates grooves of habit and mechanically acts in a repetitive manner. Just see for yourself, if you do something at a fixed time and continue doing so for a number of days at the same time, a habit is formed, and after some time it will become part and parcel of your daily routine. So this is the easiest way of overpowering this powerful idiot, instead of fighting with it outright in an unequal struggle. We can turn to our advantage this weakness by devoting regular time to the holy meditations at the fixed time with religious zeal and punctuality. It will be seen that after some time, the inner revelations will arm you with something far superior, and the mind itself, which used to resent inversion, will also start relishing the same and gradually give up its past pleasures. The Master gives us a positive approach for the solution of this riddle, which is so easy and interesting to solve by making a friendly alliance with the mind instead of making it an inveterate foe. Nothing can be gained by cursing the mind, for the mind is no small thing, so the master's advice is to befriend it. The mind's habit is to drag everything downward, yet as your friend, even if it wants to hurt you, it will not do so. Under such an arrangement, he might even cooperate with you. If he desires food, then agree, "Yes, I will give you food, but first let us do a little meditation. Then we will have food." If you immediately refuse the food, he will be tormented with the desire for it. He is like a stubborn donkey. The more you restrict him, the more stubborn he becomes. It is a very accurate definition of the mind. If you make a note in a book, "Do not read page so-and-so," it will be the first page people will read. They won't be able to resist the temptation. So make your mind a companion. Don't fight with him. The Sadhguru advises the soul to take the mind along if it wants to return home. He never says to ignore the mind or leave it behind, but that the soul should understand and make it agreeable. As long as man does not kill the physical mind and withdraw from the sense level, he cannot proceed. One must leave all sense attractions and rise above body consciousness, otherwise it remains impossible to go higher and taste the nectar of the Lord. Excessive eating and drinking and frittering away the attention on worldly sights, sounds, and sensations, all these are outer enjoyments which deny one the bliss of the inner enjoyments. Lord Buddha said we should be desireless, for desire is but sense enjoyment. Only by stepping aside from all this can one truly take a step ahead. If you can take the mind with you, it will be easier. But if you forget yourself and your aim in the mind's enjoyments, you will lose all desire to progress. Make it your companion and make it understand the situation, for the mind is unhappy, so much so that at times it cries out in torment. Make a friend of the mind. It is our cruel enemy, which will go on tormenting our life. But by making friends with it, we take the first step toward gaining the desired control. If one makes friends with an enemy, he may not immediately cease his enmity, but it will lessen the length of his cruelty. In this way, there are chances of his becoming stilled, during which time you will be more awakened. So it is possible to gain control over the mind only in the company of a Satguru. He will help you to befriend it, and so make the path easier. Then it may start to listen to you, whereas it usually does not. Many find this difficulty in meditation and say that their mind does not allow them to meditate. With love, make it your companion. Love is such a magnificent thing that it can control even the worst-charactered person. No matter how much you may hate your pitiful situation, yet hate will only serve to increase the problem. You may throw all the filth out of a dirty house, yet the smell of that will spread and permeate not only the interior of the house, but the surroundings too. The true solution is to start washing with the water of love, and gradually the badness will be washed away forever. If you are good to your enemy, his enmity will be softened somewhat. Because of its vast area of rule, everyone is under the mind's control. So among those who practice meditation, very few rise above even the first region, even fewer rise above the second, and to rise above the third is really something rare. Stilling the mind. Mind is accustomed from ages to hop about and live on things of the outer world. The more it goes out, the more it is scattered and the less peaceful it is. Peace comes from within and not from without. One must invert within to get it. You have been given the way for inversion and staying on within to enjoy peace and bliss in the higher planes. Outer life and inner progress go hand in hand. No spiritual progress can be made without ethical living. Great stress is therefore laid on the latter. You need not be frustrated. Everything will come in due time by the grace of the Master. Time factor is necessary. Please do not be impatient, but carry on your job steadfastly and lovingly with faith in the Master power. The inner experiences will increase from day to day. Work is worship. During the day, when you are busy in your worldly vocation, please be fully devoted to it with diligence, so that your mind is fully absorbed in the work you do. Should, however, there be any moments when your mind is free, these moments should be utilized in repeating the five holy names, or sweetly thinking of the Master, or listening to the sound current. If that has developed, all this may seem difficult in the beginning, but slowly and slowly the mind gets into the habit, and soon it begins to like and enjoy the meditations and this sort of truthful and straight life. The outer failings are to be viewed with a keen eye, and the failures are to be removed from day to day. There is a sound of truth vibrating within, a song which is sung in every being. There is a great attraction in hearing this sound, through which all other attractions will fade away, and the stage of senses will be left behind. One becomes free of them. This mouse mind has become heavy by drinking the weight of God's name. The mind can be weighted down by the mercury-like quality of the Nam, rendering it impossible to run around loose or engage in its ever-constant oscillation. There is no other means of controlling the mind. The accounts of Lord Krishna's life state that he jumped into the river Jumna and controlled the hydra-headed serpent there with the sound of his flute. This many-headed serpent is the mind, which has a thousand ways of inflicting its poison, and without that sound from the beyond, it cannot be controlled or overcome. Outer intellect and knowledge have no power over it, for though it may remain quiet for a short time, it will then run away again. If you cover a fire with ashes, it would seem there is no fire at all, yet a strong breeze will revive it and reveal the heat lying beneath. However, if you throw water upon it, even a thousand tornadoes would fail to revive it. Brave is he who has control over his mind and senses, for the inward progress is in proportion to this control. It is the repetition that brings the mind in, and the sound current that pulls it up. Please try to still the vibration of the mind, and when it stands collected in the eyes, you will pass on to the regions of light. But they could benefit still further from mastery of the mind if they could but learn the sacred technique of self-analysis and withdrawal of the sensory currents from the body. Herein you will certainly agree with Swamiji, who says that the human mind is gravely foolish in having fallen prey to the outer sense enjoyments and is endlessly entangled in worry and misery. You know that the mind is present, resents inner silence, and you know that the mind at present resents inner silence and stillness, as it has a tendency to roam without for eons and eons without end. You can keep it engaged in outer pursuits for hours at a time, but if you were to attempt inner silence and stillness, it would cry out and run riot, for then it behaves like a small babe who, when locked in a dark cell, shrieks, cries, and knocks to get out. Now, if the baby were provided with some sweets to eat and toys to play with, it would stop crying. Exactly similar is the case with the human mind. The living master holds the key into the beyond, and when he provides the child disciple with inner links of divinity, which carry him into higher regions, the latter gets a feeling of satisfaction. You know that the inner bliss is supreme and unrivaled. There is nothing similar to it on earth, but alas, The mind is so much intoxicated with the lust for woman, wine, and wealth that it fails to see and comprehend the greatness of the spiritual beatitude within. But patient and persistent efforts to keep the mind still will gradually unlock the treasures of divinity within you with the grace of the Master. Always be buoyant and fresh when you sit for meditation, and wait patiently, like a loving baby looking up into the eyes of the nursing mother. Mind is enamored of pleasures and runs after them whenever and wherever they can be found. It is stilled in the physical presence of the Master. It is by His divine radiation that the souls are attracted towards Him, and the mind which gets consciousness from the soul is stilled for the time being. Tulsi Sahib says, the attention or the outer expression of soul is controlled in the company of a sadh. It is only then that the mind attains some stillness. But pleasures of the flesh are quite different from true happiness born of inner peace in the soul. If the mind is provided with the appetency to relish something sublime and gets an opportunity of doing so, it knows the value of real happiness, with the result that the sense pleasures lose all their charm and thereafter seem insipid and valueless. All dedicated work is worship. Great is man, and Providence has blessed everyone with untold energy and strength, which, if properly harnessed, can bring in desired results. Just learn to do one thing at a time, and that too with single-minded attention and devotion. Ordinarily, the sun's rays do not burn, but when the same are passed through a convex lens, these become so powerful that they burn anything placed in their range. Similar is the case with concentrated attention, which will enable you to progress in every sphere of your life, including meditation. Please be rest assured, my love and blessings are always with you in all noble undertaking and enterprises. In proportion to the loosening of the union of mind with matter, the union of mind with soul strengthens. Carefully, therefore, examine the tendencies of the mind and study its weaknesses, and try to overcome them. So long as there is dirt in the mind, it cannot stay within. Its attachments draw it out. Whichever pan of the balance is loaded, that pan goes downwards. Mind is our enemy, and like an enemy, its movements should be watched. The whole world, man, animal, bird, or insect, dances to the tune of the mind. Every creature is being tossed up and down by it. The only place when mind dances is when it is brought before the current. Only then it becomes helpless. It cannot be controlled by the study of scriptures, nor by the performance of austerities. Neither the soldier, nor the warrior, nor the conqueror, nor the moralist have succeeded against it. He who ever succeeded against it did so by catching the sound current. That concludes the reading in the book, The Teachings of Kirpal Singh, Volume 2, pages 134 to 140. To continue now, this is from the February 1969 Satsandesh, a talk by Master Kirpal entitled Ek Onkar Ashabd Anam. There is only one reality. All the rishis and munis from time immemorial have talked of that reality, but none has been able to describe it in its fullness, nor will anyone be able to do so. The reality can neither be known nor can it be comprehended. One has to merge oneself into it, or in other words, one has to rise into it, growing into higher consciousness. When a drop of water enters the ocean, it ceases to be a drop and gets merged in it. Thus the drop cannot know the magnitude of the ocean. So is the case with the sages and seers. They have made pointed references to the great reality, inasmuch as they could do with the help of inadequate words. With all their attempt at describing the reality, it remained undescribed. All the philosophies of the world have tried to describe God in one way or the other, but the enigma has remained unsolved as ever. All attempts at explaining the reality have failed, the last words generally being, not this, not this. God is something more than we see or we understand. The mind and the intellect cannot reach him. The absolute, at best, has been described as a shabd, wordless. God in abstraction is inexpressible, as he has not yet come into expression. We may call him anam, nameless, ashruti. Nanak speaks of him as one, or ek onkar, the primal manifestation. These epithets have been given only when he first came into manifestation or expression. Before coming into being or expression, he cannot be called either one or two. After expression, he has been termed as one. The great teacher then goes on to explain what is meant by one. The first form, as assumed by the Absolute, is that of Satnam, or truth, or unchangeable permanence. From Anam, nameless, he became a name, the Absolute coming into expression or being. As such, he became the creative principle enlivening his creation, the substratum of life immanent in everything. What is life? It is something which is eternal, imperishable, and indestructible, and hence sat, or what remains unchangeable under all conditions and circumstances. Again, Nanak tells us about the nature of sat, or truth. Truth ever was. Truth was the beginning of the cycles of time. Truth doth remain, and truth shall ever remain, saith Nanak. After having said so much, one could not wean himself away from the reality which ever was, ashabd or anam, and hence homage was paid to that reality, addressing it as anam. When this reality came into being, it came to be known as one, and Nanak tells us of this one as, behind the great power called one, there lies a great mystery, and he who knows it knows that power to be both the absolute as well as the shining principle going into expression. This mystery has got to be solved. It can be solved intuitively by one who becomes a conscious co-worker of the divine plan. The power and spirit of the absolute which is running into expression is called Brahman. The knower of this Brahman merges in the Brahman, but our goal is elsewhere in what may be called Par-Brahm, or Sat-Brahm, or Katuseth-Brahm, the bedrock on which Brahm rests. Hence, Sat-Nam and Brahman are but different degrees of the Absolute. Par-Brahm is the ground on which Brahman stands. We have, therefore, to expand ourselves by degrees, until our little self grows so big as to embrace the totality of his being beyond Brahman. As we rise gradually into higher consciousness and expand, we unwittingly rise above the petty ego in us, sacrificing it first for the sake of the family, then the tribe, then the nation, and finally for mankind. Nay, for the entire creation, until one coincides with the one principle, Sat Nam. This is called self-elevation. Thine, O thine, is all power and greatness. The more I see thee alone, losing all thought of myself. They whose inner eye is awakened see that the power of God is working in and around them. Whatever they do for the love of the Lord, they do it for the love of the Lord. Of Sain, the barber saint, it is said that once when he was cooking his food, a dog snatched the bread and ran away. The saint ran after the dog, calling him back so that the bread could be buttered. This is what a really awakened man would do, for he sees the same self in the dog as in himself. We have therefore to take hold of a real saint, no matter in what garb he may be. He would lead us from the name to the named, from words to the word, and on to the wordless. The sound is of two kinds, outer and inner. The outer sound depends upon the inner sound, but leads us outwards and not inwards, as the inner sound would do. When the absolute God came into being, he came in the form of inner sound. Of this inner sound it is said, the creation and the dissolution both depend on the Shabd, the word, and it is from the word that creation once again springs into being. Now we have to see how we can get a contact with the word. This contact can only be established by the guru power in the guru, who is word personified. Though the word is in us, and we live, move, and have our very being in the word, yet we are not conscious of it. Why? Because the word lies beyond the range of the senses, the mind, and the intellect, while our attention, as at present, is flowing outward into the world. We are every moment going into expansion without, and until we learn to invert, we cannot experience the word. As long as one is running fast without, carried away by egotism, one cannot have a taste of the word, nor can the word attract him. Every moment we are being tormented by the lusts of the flesh, desires, greed, anger, attachment, and selfishness or egotism. We cannot possibly invert. We shall have to retrace our steps, rise above body consciousness to get a contact with the word, which for its manifestation depends upon the grace of some perfect master. Unless we get this conscious contact and the foretaste of this, we cannot love the word. We shall have to forsake the world for the sake of the word. The flesh and the spirit are two disparate entities. To arise into the life of the spirit, we must rise above the flesh. Love for the word is quite different from the knowledge of the word on intellectual level only. Faith in the word would come only after an actual experience of the word. Faith is the root cause of all religions. Namdev, as a boy, used to see his grandfather making an offering every day to his deity. One day, in the absence of his grandfather, he made an offering to the deity. But when he saw that the family god did not take anything out of the food offered to him, the child vowed not to take any food until the god accepted the offering. This is called faith. So we will have to develop a childlike faith in the word. The word upholding the earth and the heavens. Whatever we see in the world is from the word. Nobody has seen God with the eyes of flesh. But one can have an experience of the power and spirit of God, the light and sound, the first visible expression of the absolute God. But how? Nanak says, those eyes are different which can witness the glory of God. Lord Krishna speaks of it as Divya Chakshu, or the illumined eye, or the single eye of Christ. The Hindus call it Shiv Netra, and the Muslims Chasam-e-Batin. Until this eye is developed, one cannot see the light of God. All of us are living in the world of words, and we know how inadequate is the language of the three-dimensional world, and how we are constantly flowing out with the current of time. There is yet another word, the Holy Word, which enables us to withdraw from the world of words and takes us out of it into the world of the Word, the Kingdom of God. There is a divine symphony in the Holy Word. Socrates tells us, I hear a voice which attracts me and takes me into a new world of which I cannot give any description. This voice is of the voiceless. Annie Besant speaks of the voice of silence. Tulsidas, the author of the famous epic Ramayana, writes, I cannot sing of the greatness of the name. Even Lord Rama can hardly do justice to it. When we cannot adequately describe the word, how difficult it would be to talk of the word less. With our poor intellect, we cannot possibly understand the word and its potentialities. Still, the rishis and the munis, in their own way, try to tell us something of the word. What we cannot comprehend on the intellectual level can yet be apprehended by rising above intellect. The scriptures by themselves cannot give us this intuitive knowledge. A man of intuition can give us an experience of what he himself has experienced. His company alone is not enough. It may for a while give us some kind of peace, but not real and everlasting peace, which will come only when he chooses to manifest in us the fountainhead of peace. All beauty and glory lies in the Word, and until the Word is manifested and we consciously establish a contact through the grace of a perfect master, we cannot have an appreciable idea of this power and spirit of God. In the Rig Veda, we read of Vak Siddhi, or the power of God coming into being. We have to catch this God into expression power by rising above mind and matter. That concludes the reading for today. And we thank you, beloved Master Kripal, for your perfect words and perfect truth. And we are so grateful to you. The Master's words are the Master. We are so grateful. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Jack, for the wonderful reading. Reminder, next week, before the satsang, turn your clocks back 1 hour. Today we had 82 people at the satsang. Thank you, everybody, for attending. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now please hang up your phone.